Welcome to Northern Goal, the football podcast from the Evening Express and Press and Journal. I'm Ryan Cryle, and today I'm joined by Danny Law, Paul Third and Andy Skinner as we attempt to once more get through all of the issues affecting North clubs. On the agenda is, of course, reconstruction. However, we've also got John Robertson's new deal at Cali Thistle, the Premiership's return to training, Ross County's restructuring and Aberdeen's imminent re-signing of Johnny Hayes to get through. First, though, it was confirmed yesterday by the SPFL that reconstruction is dead, and only 16 of 42 clubs said they would vote for a permanent 14-10-10-10 model if the league governing body brought forward an official motion. Relegated clubs like Hearts and Partick are furious, but Andy, you were talking to Cali Thistle and Brora Rangers yesterday, who both still had hopes of promotion. How have they reacted to the news?
Yeah, well, yesterday brought quite a sort of turbulent three-month period to an end for both Cali Thistle and Brora because, you know, they stood to be directly affected by, you know, this proposal from day one. You know, from Cali Thistle's point of view, they were obviously hoping that, you know, there would be the possibility of elevation to the Championship, having finished second last season. So, you know, they stood to be a real beneficiary from what was put forward. And, you know, they had maintained that they supported 14-10-10-10 all the way through from the first board meeting that they held back in March. Obviously, since then, there had been other proposals that that came and went, all of which involved a 14-team Premiership. But I think just as time went on, they became a little bit less optimistic about, you know, the real chances of this going through. I spoke to Ross Morrison just before the, you know, the vote yesterday, and you know, he mentioned that he kind of wouldn't be surprised if it fell through. So I think there was a, you know, almost an air of resignation there as to the fact they were going to be playing in the Championship. It's certainly what they've been preparing for, you know, on the proviso that, you know, anything on top of that would have been a, you know, a major bonus for them. But in terms of Brora, you know, their situation is slightly different in that they've kind of been left on the outside looking in. Obviously, having won the Highland League, they never got a vote when the original proposal to end the season was put forward. So they've kind of just had to wait to see how things unfold. And, you know, one of the points that William Powdy, the chairman, alluded to yesterday was just the lack of direct communication that's come to them. You know, for a team that have done their own bit by winning the Highland League, normally that would put them into a playoff, but, you know, they've just had to kind of watch their own pathway into the SPFL, which they're obviously really keen to go and, you know, see through. That's just fallen away over these 3 months, and they're back to square one, really.
What is everyone's kind of gut reaction in terms of whether an injustice has been done here by the way things have panned out with the teams that have been relegated, the teams that haven't had the chance at promotion, Brora, Kelty obviously not had the chance to climb into the SPFL?
Well, we're going back to the start here, aren't we? Hearts and Stranraer were bottom when the clubs themselves voted to end the season. Partick Thistle are the one team who I have a degree of sympathy for because they had a game in hand, so it's not really been that level cut-off point, if you like. I can completely understand why there's a lot of sympathy for them. I have a lot of sympathy for them. But you can maybe clear this up for me, guys. Am I right in thinking that Hearts actually voted to end the season?
No idea.
I'm not entirely sure.
I'm pretty sure they did. I think they were one of the clubs that supported it on condition they were getting to have a discussion about league reconstruction. But that's all it was, a discussion about league reconstruction. As we've seen with every vote we've had, official or unofficial, the appetite simply isn't there. We can go and talk about this ad nauseum, yet we're back where we started. The clubs have lost a lot of money and they're looking going, we can't afford to be sharing out this wealth or lack of it now, even thinner, spreading it even thinner than what we have. So we'll have to look after ourselves. That's what every club has done.
Yeah, so I mean, I can understand why Hearts are feeling so frustrated with it and the other clubs that have been demoted. I mean, I agree, I probably feel the most sympathy as well with Partick Thistle. I mean, I always thought that 14-10-10-10 seemed a good compromise because, you weren't punishing anyone with relegation, but you were rewarding with promotion. But I mean, Hearts are obviously now facing a much shorter season in the Championship with reduced games. I mean, I feel that like for them to take legal action is a step too far, and I'm quite disappointed actually that they're going down that route. Obviously, Anne Budge is thinking about trying to do the best for her club and feels that they have a strong case. And obviously, with what's happened in French football and Belgian football, they might have encouragement there that it might be a case that they can win. But I mean, you've got to remember as well that the SPFL doesn't have really any substantial cash reserves. So if the £6 million figure that Hearts might be looking for that's been quoted, I mean, that would probably end up being money that comes out of the Sky deal and would mean reduced prize funds for other SPFL teams if Hearts were successful. I don't think they will be successful. I feel that the SPFL will be able to put forward a decent argument that they exhausted every avenue. And ultimately, it was the clubs that voted against the change of structure. But I mean, Partick Thistle, I think they were two points adrift with a game in hand. And they're now facing life in League One. And although Hearts will know that their season should start in October, Partick Thistle, like all the teams in League One and League Two, have no idea when they're going to be able to play games again. And also think that Brechin have been pretty fortunate to avoid demotion when Hearts, Partick and Stranraer have. So I've got a lot of sympathy for Brora Rangers and Kelty as well.
That is something, Danny, what you said there, that doesn't sit quite right with me. The fact that we're talking about, I've mentioned this to you guys this morning already, Donald Finlay on BBC Sports Sound programme, the County Meath chairman yesterday, saying how the teams that were bottom of the league, it was fair to send them down despite them having games to play, but Brechin would have faced a playoff and would have to drop out of the SPFL and would have been in real trouble probably against Brora or Kelty Hearts in that playoff, but they have somehow avoided relegation. What I wanted to ask was, why do we think then that given 14-10-10-10 was a solution that didn't really punish any club but rewarded clubs that were probably deserved promotion? Why do we think the clubs have chosen not to support that at this time?
I think it just comes back down. Yeah. Yeah, no, it is money. It's as you put it like that, it comes across as a fair idea. You know, it makes a lot of sense as a compromise. It rewards promotion and obviously eliminates the the consequences of relegation for everybody. But again, the problem is if you're a chairman or a director of a Premiership club and you're looking at your balance sheet for the new season, you're not going to renege on potential gates against Old Firm, with the greater likelihood of being in the bottom eight as it would have been. So, you know, every club has taken a decision based on their own balance sheet, as was always going to happen. You know, that's just the way that this voting structure works as a members' organisation. So as fair as a system as it would have been, logistically, it just never seemed like it would have the traction to go through.
If I can take you back, guys, to the Paul Third dodgy school of mathematics. I mean, when we look at it, what was it, 42 clubs had a vote yesterday and only 16 supported it. Now, out of that 16, I look at Hearts, Partick, Stranraer, who all clearly supported it. And it's a stretch to say Carly Thistle, Falkirk and Edinburgh City would have been another three clubs that supported a move to have league reconstruction. Why? Because all six of those clubs stand to benefit from this vote going their way. So we can discount them. That leaves 10. 10 teams out of 42 can legitimately say we voted for the greater good and not for our own self-interest. So all the other 32 really should just zip it and move on.
Do you think there is any way, there is any model of governance? I know they've had a similar discussion in England with the decision to end the League One and League Two season. In terms of stopping teams, obviously you want a democratic system, but how do you, if you've got a democratic system, how do you stop teams voting in their own self-interest? Can you?
Well, you can't really, because that's impossible. And with a situation like this, there's always going to be winners and losers, people that were unhappy with how it all panned out. And unfortunately, if you're going to stick with 12 in the top flight and you're going to promote the championship winners, then obviously someone's going to have to drop out of the league. And it's the same for the other leagues as well. But I mean, it's difficult when you've got 42 different clubs, all with different agendas, and clubs that like contrast in the size of likes of a Cowdenbeath and Celtic. So completely different agendas and what their ultimate aims are with what they can do within Scottish football. So to try and please all of those different teams is, you're on a hiding to nothing, I guess. But no, I mean, this was always going to be something that, I mean, there's the likelihood that it could end up in the courts and that it was going to wrangle on all summer. And this will continue for a long time to come.
One thing that did strike me as slightly poor form, shall we say, was William Powrie in the Press and Journal today, saying that there had not really been any communication with themselves, the Highland League champions at Brora, or Kelty Hearts, the Lowland League champions, from the SPFL about how things were kind of progressing. They were having to hear things secondhand, presumably from SPFL chairman at the various clubs. He says that, well, one, it's kind of a bit rude, but also that the kind of integrity of the pyramid system has been compromised, possibly to a point where in future seasons, if for a variety of reasons, I suppose, that they could make decision once again to not hold the pyramid playoffs for whatever reason. And that's a real shame, wouldn't it?
Well, the pyramid hasn't existed this season.
Brora and Kelty are the real losers. They are the real losers in all of this. They were given no input, no vote, no say. They've been kept dangling along all the way as soon as they've been declared champions of their respective leagues. And that's it. They have just been ignored, and it does make a mockery of why did we set all this up?
The pyramid's something that the SFA fought long and hard to introduce. It creates a pathway for ambitious clubs to find a way into the league, which is something that should be encouraged. And particularly when you've got a situation where two clubs are so keen to, you know, forge a way into the league setup and really kick on. It's quite sad the way that it's unfolded, where, you know, that's, you know, totally out of their hands. That's an opportunity that they've been denied.
I also think the Brechin scenario as well was one that was quite interesting, because in terms of the pyramid, in truth, Brechin, if they were to have been demoted, should have gone to the Highland League, but they'd kind of made it quite clear that their preference would have actually been to the Lowland League. And that would have caused quite a few issues and problems, because they were obviously a team that comprised of mainly players from the Central Belt. So they had no appetite really to go and be playing games against Wick Academy and Fort William when it's the majority of their players are based in Glasgow and Edinburgh. So I think that, I don't know whether that would have became an issue and why Brechin have managed to avoid demotion, but I know that there was a big issue coming up on the horizon with Brechin and where they wanted to go, because it should have been, if you're north of the Tay, that you should have gone into the Highland League. But perhaps that's an issue that they've perhaps tried to dodge, with the fact that Brechin have avoided being demoted to either the Highland League or the Lowland League.
Conspiracy.
At the risk of upsetting the apple cart, can I say I have a little bit of sympathy for Brechin? Because they're being painted as the bad guys because they have a position on the board or representation on the board at the SPFL. But and we've touched on this earlier in this episode. Brechin were not due to be relegated. Brechin ended the season in the same position as Hamilton Accies. They should be going into a playoff. Mm-hmm. And people want to rewrite history and say, oh, it's how did Brechin get to stay up and all the other teams at the bottom go down? Because the team at the bottom of League Two doesn't automatically go down. I don't know why people seem to struggle or want to overlook that fact.
No, but they've been fortunate to avoid going into a playoff, though.
Yes, as are Hamilton Accies. Hamilton Accies have got a position on the board. I don't hear everyone jumping up and down saying, what's going on? Why are Hamilton getting away with it? It's let's have a pop at the easy target of Brechin, which comes back to the greater point. If it had been someone like Hamilton Accies at the bottom, or another smaller team, if you like, at the bottom of each division, I don't think anyone would be kicking up near the same fuss. It still comes back to, let's try and keep Hearts in the Premiership. That's what a lot of clubs have been pushing for, I think, because it's all about the money. Everything comes back to money.
We must leave the topic of reconstruction in a minute. However, just final question for you is, do you think it is dead? Do you think it is finally gone away, bar any legal challenge from Hearts? Or do you think we'll see somebody propose another model just late, the final hour, to try and get something through?
No, that's it. It's gone. It's gone.
Yeah, time dictates that it's gone, I think. You know, you've got Premiership clubs starting training again, so that logistically makes it difficult for Inverness to take their place in a top flight for next season. I just don't see any way that you know, the timings can all align for any reconstruction to happen now.
I think it's dead, but I think it's going to turn real nasty in the weeks ahead, unfortunately.
Well, regardless, we shall never speak of it again. Next up, John Robertson's new deal at Cali Thistle. In a piece of good news this week, it was revealed that John Robertson had signed a 2-year extension at the Caledonian Stadium, which means he will now remain at Cali Thistle until at least the summer of 2023. Andy, there's no other way of looking at this rather than it being a sensational piece of business early in the summer for Cali Thistle.
It certainly is, yeah, because you know, while obviously the uncertainty over which league they're going to be playing in has wrangled on, there's also the issue of Cali Thistle losing you know, a number of their players over the last 6 months. So, you know, were they to have been in a position where John Robertson's coming into the last year of his contract, we've obviously seen St Johnson job come up and John Robertson's been mentioned along with that one. You've got the potential scenario of Daniel Stendel leaving Hearts and Robertson being a, you know, a front runner for that should it come up. You know, the prospect of losing John Robertson at this stage would be a disaster for Carly Jags. So to get that, you know, commitment from him to take him up to 2023 just gives them a real platform now to go and rebuild the squad, as he's proven capable of doing on countless previous occasions. It's a huge boost for everyone at the club.
Duncan Shearer obviously touching on the sort of squad issues in the his Press and Journal column today. He also touched on potential problems with Cali Thistle's training situation at the moment. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, obviously Cali Thistle train at Fort George, which is you know, an MOD base, and I think there's an agreement in place between Cali Thistle and the MOD for them to train until 2032, because it's going to be closing down, but they're keen to do it on a phased basis. But it seems as if there's a you know, a change in the planning, which might bring about a closure a bit sooner than that. So you know, without, you know, having too much say in the matter, I think Cali Thistle are potentially facing the prospect of having to find a new training ground before that time. But you know, from having spoken to the club, that I don't think they see it as too imminent an issue. You know, they've got it on a sort of year-to-year basis just now, and you know, they are quite relaxed about it in the meantime, just given the plethora of other things that are on their plate just now. But it certainly, it would force them to sort of think outside the box if you know, that there was to be a, you know, a shift in terms of that planning process in the next wee while.
We've obviously waffled on about reconstruction, but something else the SPFL revealed yesterday was the consensus among Championship clubs that next season will only be 27 games. What was Cali Thistle's take on that? Were they happy enough?
Yeah, because that gives them clarity, really, in terms of when they're going to start. And obviously it's not going to become any easier, you know, the longer you go on without a start date. So I guess they can now continue to take advantage of the furlough scheme until they're given a date to start training again. Obviously, they'll lose out on you know, some income in terms of, you know, home games that won't go ahead. There's the issue of, you know, Hearts now going to be in the Championship. There will be some teams that have Hearts twice at home with their huge support that they bring, and some that only play Hearts once at home. So you know, these are issues that will have to be ironed out in the coming weeks. But think it just gives them that certainty now of knowing it's not going to be any time before October, and they can just start to make plans based around that.
Continuing this interrogation, Andy, as our Highlands expert, Ross County obviously have announced a huge restructuring at the club, which has seen Stephen Ferguson, the co-manager, move into the chief executive role, and Stuart Kettlewell taking control of the team himself. What was your first reaction when you heard that was how things were going to be changed at the club?
It's an interesting one. My first thought is that Stephen Ferguson is a really good fit for that chief executive role, because you're talking about a guy who's, you know, filled about just about every position within that club now, you know, having been the first full-time player that they signed back in 1996, obviously went on to forge a coaching path after he retired, came back to County and oversaw a lot of the work within the club's youth system. He's done a bit of community work as well, and he's obviously spent the last 2.5 years in the dugout. And you know, there's a lot of experience that he's built up there in dealing with, you know, different types of people. The big change for him will obviously be kind of stepping into the boardroom as opposed to, you know, the dugout. He's a predominantly a football guy, so there is going to be a real change of focus for him there. But I think it also allows Stuart Kettlewell also a bit of room to develop as his own manager. The co-manager partnership was something that kind of sprung up in a real hour of need for County when they were trying to sort of, you know, garner a bit of momentum at the end of a really difficult season, when, you know, obviously culminated in their relegation. But you know, they've struck together a good partnership as co-managers. But something that Stephen Ferguson himself alluded to last week was, you know, they did feel as if that couldn't go on forever, and there had to be an element of long-term planning behind, you know, how they move on. So I think they've cobbled together a really strong kind of partnership, and the coaching team they've got in place as well, with Richie Britton and Don Cowie. You know, there's a lot of experience there and a lot of real sort of Ross County heritage there, which you know, you have to think that will command respect around the club as well.
Before we move on to Don Cowie and what a career he's had, and Richie Britton joining as well, the piece you wrote last week with Stephen Ferguson, or was it last week? Might have been yesterday, where he discussed the fact that his new role will actually give him more time than he's had in the last couple of seasons to focus on the recruitment. That's something that him and Stuart Kettlewell haven't really been able to do, because they're spending time coaching the team, they're spending time in the dugout, they've not actually been able to maybe spend enough time looking at players and developing that side of things. Do you think it's something that's shown in the recruitment?
I think it's it goes back a long way. The recruitment struggles that both Ross County and Inverness face, just any manager that's been in that job will tell you how difficult it can be to try and convince a player who's settled in the Central Belt or in England, for that matter, to try and uproot, when they've got family commitments and, you know, potentially kids at school, partners who have full-time jobs, players are more likely to stay where they are. So I guess that brings quite a lot of behind-the-scenes work that will need to go into, you know, trying to convince players to move north. So I think Stephen Ferguson will now have that kind of whole opportunity to focus solely on that. In the past, I guess he was having to divvy his time up between recruitment and coaching. The coaching side is something that's now completely up to Stuart Kettlewell and his team. Whereas, you know, Stephen Ferguson will be able to kind of devote a bit more time to just dealing with agents and, you know, even scouting players out as well. There's a lot of work that goes into signing players, and I think the two of them are comfortable with the way that dynamic will now work. Obviously, Stephen Ferguson made it clear that Stuart Kettlewell will still have the full say on which players come in. It's not as if he's going to be, you know, finding players turning up at training that he's had no input into. But there is a good dynamic there, which does make a lot of sense when Stephen Ferguson explained it last week.
In terms of the recruitment priorities, Kempney are obviously already in a much publicised fullback hunt. Ross Stewart, their star striker, who won, I think, pretty much all of their Player of the Season awards. He also sort of dismissed a bit of transfer speculation regarding him. Is that kind of the priority in terms of keeping a player on board, Andy? Ross Stewart?
Aye, I mean, Ross Stewart's a player that they would hate to lose at this stage, because there is a feeling that, you know, he's got unfinished business there with the way his season panned out last year. He obviously made a great start to his first Premiership season, scored 11 goals in only half a season because, you know, he was out injured with a hamstring injury he picked up in the final game of 2019, kept him out for 2 months. So he was just coming back into the side just as football stopped. And, you know, he'll be, you know, desperate to kind of kick on again at the beginning of next season with a, you know, a sort of renewed enthusiasm. And, you know, County will feel that they've got more to get out of him. He's only got a year left in his contract. And, you know, just ever since, really, he went through that goal-scoring spree, there's been a number of clubs that have kind of been circling as potential suitors. But I guess you would wonder if teams will be really prepared to, you know, pay a transfer fee at this stage, given all the uncertainties about finances amidst the pandemic. Obviously, Hibs, just in the last 24 hours or so, have outlined some of the, you know, financial struggles that they're facing as a result of the situation. So, you know, that might count in their favour to an extent, but they certainly, it seems as if the speculation has continued even, you know, amidst the shutdown.
Is it one of those things, though, with Stewart, where it just basically comes down to what club comes forward? I mean, if a club from the English Championship comes forward, you'd probably expect County to sell, yeah? If an Aberdeen or a Hibs come forward. Not that we're suggesting that Aberdeen are interested in Ross Stewart on this podcast, but...
Sounded like it, Ryan.
Happened before with Jackson Irvine and Liam Boyce. I mean, they've obviously gone from County... down south and done well, and I think anyone that's seen Ross Stewart in good form last season would fancy him as a player that would be able to do well, be that at a team that's slightly higher up the Scottish Premiership or down in England. He looks a player that's got all the attributes and could go on and have a good career elsewhere, but Ross County want to keep him for as long as they possibly can.
He certainly does have all the attributes. I mean, he's obviously got the height, which is a huge asset for a centre forward. He's deceptively quick as well. He doesn't strike you as the sort of player that will carry a lot of pace, but he's got a real knack of kind of appearing in the deadly positions in the box to finish off moves. And you can obviously see why he would appeal to clubs that are looking for that type of forward. But it's a good reputation that County have carved out in recent years in terms of developing players. And another one, the most recent example was Jamie Lindsay, who is obviously just in the last week become a Championship player as a result of Rotherham's promotion. And I think they've always said that they won't stand in, you know, these players' way if a big opportunity like that comes up. It would just be a case of trying to hold out for, you know, the right fee that would kind of reflect the, you know, the work that's been put into developing them.
What about the fullback hunt then? Andy, who are we expecting County to land in the summer window?
Obviously, had been linked with Aaron McGowan, who left Hamilton last month, but has since appeared at Kilmarnock. So that's a pursuit that will go on no longer. Richard Tate, who left Motherwell, is another example of a player who has been mentioned, but... Now, they certainly need to bring in at least a couple because, I mean, currently have no senior fullbacks at the club. They've elevated Josh Reid, just an 18-year-old teenager into the first team ranks for the new season, but you'd imagine he'll be, you know, there as cover with a view to breaking into the team further down the line. So no, they're under no illusions that they need to bolster those areas.
Okay. Well, we've put it off long enough, I think. One player that won't be in the team next season is now a coach at Ross County, Don Cowie. What a career he had.
Yeah, he has to go down as one of the greatest kind of Highland football success stories, I would say, because particularly the journey that he made in starting at Ross County, the team he always supported. There's YouTube footage of a Scottish Cup tie that County played back in the 90s. And Cowie's leading the team out as a mascot. So, you know, for him to sort of start his career playing for County, obviously had a really good spell coming through into the first team there, which at the time forced him to sort of put aside his loyalties in a way and make the move to Cali Thistle, who were the Premiership side at the time. You know, they'd been in the top flight for a number of years, and you know, as a North footballer, you know, at the time they were obviously the team that gave players the best chance of forging a career at the top level. It's interesting to see how sort of times have changed over recent years, where, you know, obviously Ross County are now picking off some of Inverness's best players, but you know, he obviously went down south to Watford initially in the English Championship. Did well there. It was during his time at Watford that he won his first Scotland cap. Continued to sort of play in the Championship with Cardiff, and you know, reached the League Cup final with Cardiff, in which Liverpool defeated them on penalties. It was a great final in which Cardiff more than held their own over 120 minutes. You know, a 2-2 draw that they held Liverpool to on that day, but couldn't quite get over the line in the shootout, despite Cowie himself scoring a penalty. But you know, after that, he went on to play in the Premier League with Cardiff, had a season there, wasn't able to prevent them from being relegated, but he still clocked up more than 20 appearances in the top flight, playing against, you know, your Gerrards and Lampards of that era. So, you know, obviously a real good experience for him at that point, which coincided with more Scotland caps. You know, became quite a fixture in the squads at that point. Went to Wigan after that, back to the Championship, eventually to Hearts, where he, you know, was quite a key part of, you know, the side there. And then Ross County is where it's but it's finished for him playing-wise, which is quite a fitting way for that 19-year career to end. But he's now, you know, decided to hang up the boots and focus entirely on the coaching path.
The full circle really has to, I suppose, I'm not trying to cast aspersions here, because Ketch has only technically been the manager in his own right for a week, but it does have a feeling of succession planning being put in place here for further down the line, especially as far as Don Cowie's concerned, isn't it?
He certainly seems a guy that's made for being a manager in his own right at some point. Yeah, just with the way he comes across, the way that he conducts his professional life as well. You know, he's very committed to his fitness, which I suppose is a major reason why he was still playing at the age of 37 in the Premiership towards the, you know, the tail end of last season. He came back into the team after being injured for the first half of the season, and he was one of County's, you know, best performers after the turn of the year. So I think Stuart Kettlewell would happily have had him as an option in his side for next season, but as you hear with many players who are kind of facing that crossroads in their career, it's one or the other. You know, I think there's a feeling that the player manager idea doesn't always work. You know, you kind of have to commit fully to the coaching path, and I think Don will be pursuing that with everything he's got to hopefully, you know, lay the foundations for a successful career.
So we will wait and see how Don Cowie gets on. I'm sure he'll be a big success, as big a success as a coach as he's been as a player. Next up, we'll move on to Aberdeen. Okay, so we touched on this a bit last week, but it looks imminent now that Johnny Hayes will pen a two-year deal to return to Aberdeen. Should we all be very excited, Paul Third?
Can you hear the excitement in my voice? Johnny will be a terrific addition to the Don squad. I don't think there'll be a better signing in Scotland out with the big two this summer, to be honest. Where's he going to play now? I mean, wherever needed. I think that's always been the answer when it comes to Johnny Hayes under Derek McInnes. I've seen him play left back, left wing. I've seen him play off the striker. I've seen him play centre forward. I remember Adam Rooney dropping short. I think it was a Celtic game. And he was just flicking the ball on to Johnny to run in behind the defence all the time. So he'll inevitably play all three positions for the Dons at some point next season once this is all signed off.
If Thomas Czerny doesn't sign back on, they can stick him in the goals.
Yeah. Aim high, boys. Aim high.
He's got to be on the wing, though, surely, would be my opinion. That to sign him and play him at left back is to not make the most of having a sort of second chance at having Hayes in the team. You want him beating people. You want him playing dangerous crosses into the box. You want him shooting on sight as well. You know, like that's what I think all the Dons fans remember Johnny Hayes for, and would hope that he could be able to produce again.
I think one thing that it would give him a chance to play with wing backs, because I mean Hernandez is a sort of a player that likes to bomb forward on one side, although I haven't really seen too much of that so far. And I mean you could easily play a 3-5-2 with Hernandez and Hayes either side, because I mean both of them would have the engine to get up and down the flank. Bit of a graveyard shift, but I could see that happening.
If Hayes does join, which we will probably happen between this being edited and put out, the sort of next question would be, there seems to be an abundance of wide players at Pittodrie now. Which ones do we see perhaps moving on over the summer?
Well, and let's look at the whole picture here. I think money is tight for reasons that everybody knows, not just at Pittodrie, but all across Scotland now. So I'm not expecting a substantial intake of new faces at Aberdeen this summer. You're going to have Hayes and McGinn in this team. It does leave you thinking, well, they look a bit top heavy in those types of players. You've still got Ryan Hedges, Scott Wright, Connor McLennan. But it depends how Derek McInnes sees this. You wouldn't rule out one of the three names I mentioned there going on out on loan or something at some point. But Johnny and Niall are both turning 33 next month. You've got to weigh up whether they can play every week, whether there will be games where they're rested or they might start on the bench or they might only play a half. So I think if you're Derek McInnes, he has to sit and look and go, well, if I need to take these guys on and off, who do I put in when they're not there? I think one of the three could go out on loan that we've just mentioned, and it wouldn't come as a shock if any of them did, but it's early days to make a call on that.
If you're in a situation where there's Sam Cosgrove still there, there's a three behind Sam Cosgrove, one of the three is Hayes, one of the three is McGinn, one of the three is surely Matty Kennedy, who arrived for a fee in January and did nothing to warrant being dropped, then how do you fit Lewis Ferguson in the team, who McInnes seems to prefer as a advanced midfielder as opposed to a sort of holding midfielder? It seems like there's maybe one player too many.
Maybe, but I mean, Lewis Ferguson's playing all the time. Mm-hmm. We've seen that now for 2 years under Derek McInnes. He plays when he's available. That's not going to change next season. My front three, if you like, behind a lone striker would be Kennedy, McGinn and Hayes, if all are fit. But the other three are very good options.
Yeah, plus, I mean, Aberdeen have had a season where they've suffered so badly from injuries that having a couple of options for positions, as much as they can do that in the current climate with the budget that they have, I mean, it's no bad thing to have players like that can come on and impact a game when you're maybe chasing a goal at 0-0 or a goal behind.
A lot of Dons fans are still wondering about Greg Lee. Obviously, we discussed him last week. He was on loan last season, got injured for the second half of the campaign, but he is now back at his parent club in Holland. McInnes was pretty, I would say, in an interview I've seen with him, on the record, pretty dismissive of the chances of Lee coming back anytime soon because of the current climate. Do we see a potential for that further down the line, or do we think it's just a way of sort of saying thanks, see you later?
I think Greg Lee's just been a victim of circumstance here. If he hadn't been injured, I think this would have been done and dusted probably in January. But obviously a lot has happened since January. The Aberdeen manager hasn't ruled it out. It depends when the season starts, what the financial climate will be looking like then, whether Nac Breda are willing to let him leave. I think a fee had been discussed and agreed between the clubs a year ago when he arrived, in the event it all went well. But clearly, matters have changed financially, and Aberdeen are not in a position to be paying a fee for Greg Lee, and that kind of leaves him stuck in this no man's land. A club would like to have him. I think another club would like to move him on, but Dutch football has been impacted too. So it'll be interesting to see just how Breda are feeling about all of this. They might just want to get him off the books. And if that's the case, it might open the door for Aberdeen to swoop back in and bring him to Pittodrie. I think time will tell. It's played the long game, that one, for me.
The Dons obviously announced their departures on Friday, none of which were really unexpected. Among them, the people that left that weren't loanees were your likes of Frank Ross and Danny Rogers, in terms of the guys that played in the first team. What do we think happened to Ross and Rogers, Dons' careers? Obviously, Rogers never could really get into the team because of other goalkeepers doing well, had a couple of decent spells out on loan though. Frank Ross obviously made a huge impact when he scored a free kick against Rangers and was the next big thing at one stage, but injuries have held him back. Are these guys just unfortunate, and another life would it have all panned out for them and they'd be Don's first team stars?
Possibly. I think you're hitting the nail on the head in terms of Frank Ross with your question there. I think niggling injuries have ultimately cost him his chance to try to force his way into the first team at Pittodrie. In Danny Rogers' case, an outstanding goalkeeper and captain in Joe Lewis has blocked his path. I mean, when Thomas Cherney's got a lot of experience and is a very good goalkeeper in his own right, and he can't get in the team. So I don't know what a younger goalkeeper in Rogers' case, what realistic chance he had of pushing himself top of the pecking order, as it was.
Yeah, I think it's important for Danny to try and get out there and get a club, because, I mean, he had certainly one excellent season with Falkirk, which I think got him his new Dons deal that's just expired. But I mean, he looked like the makings of a very good goalkeeper, and possibly someone that could have been a number one at Pittodrie had it not been for a player like Joe Lewis coming along. But it'll be interesting to see where both of them go next, because I think they would be the type of players that in a regular normal climate there'd be a lot of teams interested in both of them. But obviously just now it's going to be slightly more challenging for them to find new clubs, but I would expect two of them to end up in decent places and go on and have good careers.
Thomas Cherney is obviously, you mentioned him, 30. He's obviously out of contract, but all sort of all indications are that he will stay. He's been offered a new deal and they hope he'll sign it. In terms of the youth players that have left, do you think a lot of those guys, and maybe this applies to Ross and Rogers as well, Danny, you mentioned different climates there, but would any of these guys have possibly been kept on for a bit longer if there was a bit more money about just now?
I'm not sure. We go through this every summer. It's the manager's job is to assess the youth players and see who's got a chance of making the grade. I mean, there's a lot of guys. We've touched on Conor McLennan and Scott Wright, and there's Ethan Ross, Seb Ross. There's been a lot of guys who have been in and around the first team, and some are still there, and some they're maybe looking, going, look, there's too many guys ahead of them, and they need to go out and get a chance somewhere, and we just can't offer it here. It's tough. It comes with there's only a finite number of places in a first team squad available every year, and unfortunately, some young lads have to move out. But really, it all comes down to how they react to that. Can they take that knock in the chin, bounce back stronger and prove themselves elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, at the bigger clubs like Aberdeen, Celtic and Rangers and other top flight teams, I mean, generally, these the development teams, you're doing well if you maybe get one of those players from a year group to step up and become a first team player. One, maybe two. It's very unusual that you get more than that unless a team's really struggling. So a club like Aberdeen, you've got a big squad of players there playing every week for the development team, but you know that probably only one of those guys is going to go on and become like an Andrew Considine that goes and establishes himself in the first team.
Look at Lewis Ferguson. Any young player that's just leaving Pittodrie this summer just needs to take a look at Fergie. He was on the books at Rangers as a youngster. They thought, no, he's not quite big enough or not what we're looking for. Goes to Hamilton, Aberdeen spot him, bring him in, and he hasn't looked back.
Yep.
It can be done. It just comes down to the individual player and do they have that determination to go on and prove the coach that let them go wrong.
On the subject of Andy Considine and Lewis Ferguson then, final bit of housekeeping for this week. They obviously both received awards. Andy Considine cleaning up somewhat in the Dons official club awards, and Lewis Ferguson being awarded the Scottish Football Writers Association Young Player of the Year. Both richly deserved, I'm sure you think.
And goal of the season for Lewis Ferguson as well for the St Mirren strike.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that one, to be honest, but we can come back to that.
You can't argue with Andrew Considine, though, getting the Player of the Year awards. I think he had an excellent season, 6 goals, I think 39 appearances. Probably one of his best seasons at the club. Just gets better and better. But yeah, out of a sort of strange sort of up and down season for Aberdeen, I thought Andy Considine was a clear standout for Player of the Year for me.
It's frustrating a little bit because I was looking at Andy and the way things were panning out with these Scotland games coming up in March, he must have been close.
Yeah.
Must have been so close to at least making the squad, which is something that it's quite remarkable that he's never had a sniff at it in all this time. It's funny that as he gets into the veteran stage of his career, that it's only now that people are really starting to appreciate his actual value to the team that he plays for. It's been terrific. Mm. In terms of Lewis Ferguson, he had to step up last season, and he did so. The injuries to Craig Bryson and Funso Ojo left Aberdeen in real trouble. And to be fair to young Lewis, he's really stepped up. And that comes back to what we were just chatting about a few minutes ago. It's why he will be in there next season, because the manager can rely on him.
In terms of goal of the season, I will nail my colours to the mast. I actually thought that the deserving goal was Sam Cosgrove's chip against Motherwell, which I thought had the perfect combination of technique and just unabashed arrogance that you look for in a goal. I don't know about you guys, if you were happy enough with Ferguson's goal taking the prize.
I liked the Lewis Ferguson one, because I think to win the goal of the season, it's got to be one, an excellent goal, but it's also got to have the situation, the meaning as well. And I mean, you remember the amount of pressure that was on Aberdeen before that St Mirren Scottish Cup game, and that was a very early goal. It was just a great bit of skill outside of the foot, and it kind of eased a lot of that tension that was in Paisley that day. So for me, that was goal of the season because of what it meant, and ultimately ended up with Aberdeen reaching a semi-final, which is still yet to be played.
I don't think there were too many obvious candidates for goal of the season for Aberdeen. We've got that too, we've mentioned a push, maybe Zach Viner. Niall McGinn had a couple of decent ones as well, but there's not too many that spring to mind when you're sitting here thinking as we're discussing this.
Ryan Hedges against Hearts was a big one as well, opening day of the season. Smashed it into the top corner to edge a very tight game.
I mean, shameless plug, but I'm going through kind of all the best goals and the goals I consider the best goals in Dons history at the moment. And I wouldn't say that any have come close to being on that list. There have been a few in recent seasons, but yeah, hopefully next season we can come back here and have a lot more screamers, worldies, whatever you want to call them, from the coming campaign. Anyway, that concludes today's episode of Northern Goal. Thanks to Andy, Danny and Paul for joining me today. Thanks, guys.
No problem. You're welcome.
That's all, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.
The enthusiasm. please email any questions you might have about today's episode or comments to northerngoal@dctmedia.co.uk. And we'll be back next week as usual. Until then, stay safe.
Hope you loved the episode.
And if you did, we'd be grateful if you could leave us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to pick up your copies of the Press and Journal and Evening Express every day for the best football writing and analysis in the North.